joining us now. Did his GA years under John Beilein at the University of Michigan. Went to Concordia, was an alumni of the prestigious Concordia, and now patrols the sidelines for the Ohio Bobcats. His name, Kyle Barlow, the coach. Find him on Twitter at KyleBarlow4. Coach Barlow, my friend, good morning to you. Happy Masters Friday.
Oh, man, happy Masters Friday, man. I'm pumped. I love it. I love the smooth transition from college basketball, cutting down the nets, the Final Four, national championship game Monday, right into the par three contest, the practice rounds, and then you get yesterday, you know, a little slight delay to start, but what a great day. Very reminiscent of a Thursday, Friday of March Madness, right? You got all the golfers on the course. You're following your favorites. And I kind of had a theme as I was thinking about watching Bryson DeChambeau and then hearing you run down the headlines. I kind of had a theme for you this morning, Bellino. It's going to be humility. And we can touch on a lot of things with this. So the first one, let's talk about Bryson a little bit, man. Like, No longer are you out here swinging your big 8-iron around saying this is a par 65 for you, right? No longer you do that. Now you're actually playing the course. And if you think about it, and if you hear everybody talk about the Masters and Augusta and how it's different than every other golf course, it's you have to know the course. You have to have experience. You have to know your misses. You have to put it in certain areas. You can't be above the hole, you know, because it's too fast on your comeback putt, all these things. So how about a little humility maybe from Bryson to shoot 8-under? What do you think about that?
I think it's important. I think that, you know, Bryson has definitely taken a little bit of a different approach. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't get to see very much of him anymore because he jumped ship and went to that other tour where they're just throwing a bunch of money at it and trying to make this work. And it doesn't have the history or the tradition to do so. So that's why I don't think that, you know, I think the LIV Tour is a pretty good example. I think you could use the Saudi Soccer League, too. You know, Ronaldo plays there. Nobody hears anything from him. Why? Because we don't care. You know, it just doesn't have the same tradition as what the Western world has from a sport perspective. So it was good to see. I'm not a big Bryson guy, but I think you're right there on the humility track of, you know, maybe you need to tone it down a little bit. Maybe you need to just play golf instead of trying to be like this this lab rat, just trying to, you know, bulk up and get, you know, 280 pounds of pure muscle or whatever he was trying to do and, you know, swinging 18,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, just play golf. You know, don't play Hulk analytics, money ball of whatever. Just play golf, man. And he's a very talented golfer, and he had the flat stick working, man. And to quote Tim Cup, you and me both really don't love DeChambeau, but the Antichrist had a hot putter today, right? And yeah. So we'll go along with humility. We'll stay at Augusta. And you mentioned Tiger having to play what, 25 holes today, something
he's
of that nature.
23, I think. Was he got five? I think he's got five holes remaining to finish up his round.
Okay, so 23 holes today. And let's be honest, man, I watched a lot of him because the cameras were on him, which they should be, and on the main broadcast. And his swing is closer to what we saw with Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, teeing off as a ceremonial. It's closer to that as it was in Prime Tiger 2000. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's a very, you know, very fluid. He's taking a 3-wood off of number one. You know, he's really playing this golf course. He said he knows he can't outdrive Bryson, Rory, all those guys. He knows he doesn't have that, but he knows this course probably better than most, probably better than any other guy. 23 straight cuts made trying to set that record, right? So how about the humility to go out there and not try and be the longest hitter, but say, look, I can play this course. I know this course. I can hit a lefty shot out of the pine, out of the pine straw, right? So I really, really enjoyed it, man. But the ultimate test for him, right? Like, not only is he walking at a very slow pace, trying not to, you know, disturb anything, and it's what you can name his plantar fasciitis, his knee, his fused back, all that stuff, right? But really, really going to be fun to watch him. But I got another one for you. Let's talk a little hockey. Let's talk a little puck. You're talking a little Red Wings, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a little humility from when they were hot in the middle of the season and then went on the six game losing streak. But I don't know, man, in an 82 game schedule in college basketball, especially at the mid major where you got to be playing well at the right time at the end of the season, and baseball's like this as well. You have to have an elite chemistry, right? You have to have guys willing to play for each other, sacrifice for each other. I'm not there in the locker room, but sometimes, like, just watching them down the stretch, sometimes you question that. Like, I'm not saying they didn't play hard last night. They played hard last night. They played somewhat together, I guess, because, you know, you reference a point ring for DeBrincat, Raymond, say, what a pass. But does that seem a little forced? I mean, we had the little scuffle in practice. We had the absolute eggs they were laying in that six-game losing streak, including Phoenix, where they needed to win. And then even against a team that lost six in a row last week or earlier this week, the Caps, right? They really needed that game. So maybe a little humility there. But do you think they're – obviously they're not peaking at the right time, but do you think this is a chemistry thing, a player thing at all?
You know, I don't know, because they brought in a lot of different guys, right, over the last offseason. And, you know, Yzerman trying to, you know, sign and acquire, and you bring in Patrick Kane, you bring in Alex DeBrincat. You know, Patrick Kane has been kind of mum on whether or not he wants to re-sign in Detroit. I don't know if that's great to hear. I don't know what it is. I know that we do not have a number one goaltender. You know, that shorthanded goal that we give up, like, you got to make a stop there.
You're 1v1. Yeah, yeah. They took away the cross pass. You're 1v1. The goalie takes a shooter.
You got a good angle.
Pass, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just under his right armpit, right? Like, frustrating. Very frustrating.
It is. It's really frustrating because he played so well. And I think that in those glimpses of him playing well, I think that that's what he could do as a number two that isn't going to be asked to play, you know, 70 games a season. And it's kind of like quarterbacks. You got two quarterbacks, you have none. I think when you have, you know, three goaltenders, you have none, right? And if Billy Huso was available, what does that look like? But he hasn't been because he's been injured. So I don't really know. I don't know. I feel like a majority of the gang seems to get along out there on the ice. The scuffle in practice, you know, if guys are, you know, chirping at each other, I don't really have much of an issue with that, just because, you know, it takes place all the time. But it all depends on how they handle it, right? I mean, you can get after somebody, but if they don't handle it well and they let that linger on and it becomes a point of contention within the locker room, then you got to make a decision who you want to keep and who you want to get rid of.
No doubt. And I don't mean to point to that as like a reason why. It just, there's all these factors, right? Not playing well at the end of the year, because you said it, like, that stuff happens in sports, man. And as long as you're afterwards, you know, you get heated, you're in practice, whatever, you call somebody out, or, you know, somebody takes a little shot at you, and, you know, maybe you've lost a couple games, so tensions are high. Like, that happens. I think that's normal, if not healthy, as long as you're saying, all right, man, let's go grab a beer afterwards, right? You know what I mean? Like, there's all that. And then my little sister who played goalie at Michigan State is cringing at that shorthanded goal. It's like, you got to make that save, right? You have to. So, you know, moving along a little bit, Michigan hockey, playing, you know, the juggernaut of Boston College, right? A little 4-0, a little humility there, right? A little slice of humble pie with that one. And, you know, and I don't even think anybody was even talking about it. I mean, the Wings were on what a huge game last night, but was Michigan not expected to even compete in that game? Because everything I've heard is Boston College is a juggernaut.
Yeah, no, we did not, and I think you saw the remnants of it. I watched a little bit of that through the first period, then I forgot to mention it this morning, so I'm glad you brought it up, so at least I can bring it up in hour number three's headlines. But they fall 4-0 to Boston College, and that first goal that BC scored, I mean, it was like tic-tac, pling, 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 and then, you know, anytime you got a goaltender, if your sister played goaltender at Michigan State, that's a bad position you want to be in when you're at the top of the crease, and you're just yard sailing it, and someone's got a wide-open net. That's never a good spot. That's one of those, this isn't going to end well. But, you know, good for Michigan to make the Frozen Four. There were a lot of people, you know, you remember back to when Michigan last won the national championship in football, beating Washington State in the Rose Bowl. That was great. And they went on to win the national championship in hockey that same year. So a lot of people thought that maybe that was like a team of destiny. Destiny came out a little bit short.
Yep. Fun fact, my dad and I actually in 96, we were at the Michigan versus Colorado College national championship game down in Cincinnati. A little overtime winner for the Wolverines. Great experience.
Wow. The fact that you remember that, that's pretty, that's pretty impressive right there. We didn't get a chance to recap the national championship game. So speaking of humble pie and maybe a little humility, I don't think that it necessarily applies to Purdue, but UConn with a 75-60 winner there in that ball game. I mean, just destroying people. Danny Hurley, you know, and the one thing I didn't understand about this Kentucky opening, Like, why does everybody think that, you know, people want to leave where they're at, especially if you're like, oh, the Kentucky's got to go after Danny Hurley. Why would you leave there? Well, you don't have the football money for the SEC. So what? You don't need it. You haven't had it. You got one back-to-back titles. Like, what are you talking about?
I'm glad you mentioned it, because that was going to be, I got two more that I had in mind going across the whole spectrum of sports.
Oh, okay.
Kentucky, a little humility, huh? You're not that great. Not everybody just wants to drop everything they're doing and run and be your head coach. You know why? Because your fans are complete psychopaths. Complete psychopaths. And if you look at the totality of what John Calipari did at Kentucky, I get it the last couple of years. He had a D2 kid hit 10 threes against them. Like, that's the tournament. Is that John Calipari being a bad coach, or is that the NCAA tournament? You've seen Matt Painter lose in the first round as a one seed and then go to the national championship game the next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Kentucky just, you know, I'm with you. Like, I think it is a desirable destination because of the resources they put into basketball. I think them in Kansas, probably top one and two in spending in college basketball in totality. So I do think you have a lot of resources. The expectations are great, as they should be with all the resources you're given. But also, let's be honest, man, you lose a couple games and those fans are just absolutely nut jobs. And if you don't believe me, read some of the message board geniuses, who's a Twitter account, read some of the message boards at Kentucky when they lose and how they talk about the coach. And, you know, from all accounts, Calipari was just miserable there. Like, I heard he tried to get the Ohio State job. I heard he was like pursuing that until they hired Jake Diebler. Like, just miserable there, man. And it's a miserable place to be. And you look at his season, they have like a top 10 offense in the country. You know, they were really, really good. I forget how many wins, but, you know, obviously good enough to be a top seed in the tournament, right? So it's just, it's really, you know, it's really a place of humble pie for Kentucky and their fans. Like, you're not that great, man. You're not that great.
Yeah, and that's
your game. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, with the world of social media, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what really makes Kentucky that attractive. You know what I'm saying? Like, you mentioned it. Every time you lose, you can never. Nothing's ever good enough for anybody. For anybody, yeah. Nothing is ever good enough. It is the most like, how do these people live their day-to-day lives? Like, they just got to be miserable.
Well, with no pro sports, like, I think that's a factor, right? There's not a single pro sport in the state of Kentucky. So what do you have there? You have Kentucky basketball, you have Louisville basketball, which both are basketball schools. Obviously, they both have football teams, but they're basketball schools. They have the proud history tradition of basketball. And then you have horse racing. And right, and then you have Kentucky Derby, and that's all Kentucky has. Let's be honest. And then you got great bourbon. You got phenomenal bourbon being made down there.
So bunch of drunks.
Talk about. Well, hey, maybe that's a factor, right? So when you talk about your passion, it's all focused at one to two teams, and that's Kentucky and Louisville basketball. So yeah, but championship game, I think, you know, you saw two great offenses, like we've talked about. At the end of the day, Connecticut's just too good. They can beat you in too many different ways. Like, I don't think we've seen in our lifetime a two-year run, not a one-year run, a two-year run where a team just demolishes everybody in the NCAA tournament. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. And to do it with, like, a reload, like when Florida did it, they returned all their players, right? When Duke did it, they returned all their players. You know, it's a different era. UConn had to reload, and they did. And they're just phenomenal, man. And if you look at it, like, I remember, what was it, 96 Kentucky, going again back to when I was 8 years old. But I remember that team with Rick Pitino where he famously said, my second unit would have won the national championship this year. I remember that team steamrolled everybody. But I don't remember a two-year run like we've seen with UConn in my memory.
No, I mean, it's historical. And there's for people that were like, I can't believe Danny Hurley, like, why wouldn't you? Like, I would never leave Connecticut for Kentucky. Like, that sounds just, everything about that sounds awful. Now, they went and hired Mark Pope coming out of BYU, and people are mad about that because,
final?
Well, five-year deal. I don't know if it's actually, like, final, but in the 11th hour. But he's a Kentucky alum. Looking at a five-year deal. Like, maybe this is exactly what Kentucky needs. Like, maybe it's exactly, you know, because everybody else kind of looking at that job like, you know, Pope's a guy who look, won a national championship there, played a couple of years there, understands it, right? Maybe they could rally behind one of their own and like an alum and maybe be done with sort of this, you know, NBA draft factory and get back to, you know, college basketball, winning the way that you know you can win.
No doubt. So best of luck to him and his family. And yeah, I hope they, you know, experience, I hope they don't experience the wrath of Kentucky fans. I'll just say that, but you know, really rooting for them. But let's, I know we're running up against it. The least humble person in maybe the history of the world passed away yesterday. You didn't touch much on it and I don't blame you. It's not really a subject. You don't want to dance on anybody's grave ever, but you know, yeah. World's better off without him. You know who I'm referring to. About to go get some orange juice.
Yeah, it's just one of those, like, he died, I guess, and I just kind of left it at that. Like, I mean, I remember watching the Bronco on TV. Most people do. I think that most people assume that he was guilty and that he got away with murder. Wouldn't be the first NFL, might be the first NFL player to do it. But wouldn't be the last. Hey, Lewis. But I got nothing for him. Like, that's, I don't remember him as a player, so there's nothing I can really I can really add to the conversation. I only knew of O.J. Simpson as the guy that got away with murder.
No doubt. And then the Norm MacDonald jokes, obviously, and run into Twitter for the jokes. There's a lot of that going on, which I think you mentioned as well. And yeah,
kind of weird, right?
That's what it is.
Like, yeah, you know, yeah. A guy dies and then everybody's just like posting these old videos, like these stand-ups and these comedy sketches. And like the old, I forget what news reporter it was where she opened up the door and he was there with the knife and like acting like he did. I'm like, that's it. Just the whole thing is weird. You know what I mean? I was just like, yeah, OJ's dead. There you go.
even ESPN, like, as I was watching the Masters, I flashed over and, you know, they had like the picture of him and the date, you know, 1947 to 2024, whatever it is. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know about that. Just very, very weird. Cause usually, you know, you were the rest in peace, you know, great player, did this, blah, 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 blah. And everybody's just kind of like, the juice. All right, moving on. Masters Day, right? What's Tiger doing?
Yeah, exactly. Last one here for you. The Pistons closed down their 23-24 home stretch with a loss last night. They got two more games tonight against Dallas and Sunday against Wemby's World. The worst Pistons team in franchise history.
Yeah. Talk about humility, right? I mean, you're the worst in the franchise history. Monty Williams, like, I don't know, man. Hopefully he gets some rest and recovery and he comes back like he actually wants a coach instead of a guy who just took a paycheck and people begging him. I mean, is that fair to say? Is that unfair for me to say that?
Because no, that is absolutely fair to say. He is the coach, Kyle Barlow. We're back with Hour 3 next, X's and Bros, Michigan Sports Network.